The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Today we have a lot to share. I will not be able to take calls today unless it's near the end of the program. My guest a little later, Carolyn Quirci, will be talking about the power of walking, all types of walking, power walking, race walking, and how it impacts our body and mind. I'm going to take an in-depth look at the heat that we're experiencing around the United States. Last night I was watching the news reports on how hot it got yesterday. And in some places, in Tennessee, for example, the heat index went to 121 degrees. That's the hottest on record. But it wasn't the hottest overall. It was the hottest in that state. Every single day we're hearing of the hottest days on record. At the same time, there's virtually no national discussion on global warming. So today, from Bill McKibben, who we've had on this program many times, Tom Dispatch, a wilted Senate on a heated planet. Commentary. Commentary a little later on Monsanto, the world's poacher, corporate manipulator, and deceit monger, from Jeffrey Smith. I was intending to do that on my program overnight, but my commentary on chemtrails took almost an hour, so I will try to get that in today. Also, whether you are for or against the building of the mosque at 9/11, that I would like to hear. I will be reading one person's arguments on the building of the mosque, and it's someone I know, and they sent me this email, so I'm going to read it to you. And then that will be an opportunity for you to call in. That'll be a little later in the show. The latest on health and nutrition begins right now. Tea drinking is associated with fewer heart disease deaths over a 13-year period. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Arterial Sclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. It says that if you drink tea every day, you're at a lower risk of dying from any form of coronary heart disease over a 13-year period. This was done at the University Medical Center of Utrecht and the National Institutes of Public Health and the Environment in the Netherlands. They studied 37,000 participants in the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer Nutrition, a cohort study. And this is what they found. 2.1 to 3 cups of tea per day gave a protection that was substantial. 36% protection. That's a substantial protection. And of course, if you drank more cups of tea, then you had a higher risk, a lower risk rate of dying from disease. So, quote, high tea consumption is associated with reduced risk of coronary heart disease death, unquote. This is the first study of its kind. It's a major study, large study, done over a long period of time, with tens of thousands of people, 37,000 people, and it was done in the right way. So we can now believe that between 3 and 5 cups of tea a day, green tea, oolong tea, white tea, red tea, black tea, are all good for us. Now this one was specific in that it was good to help prevent us from dying from disease of the heart. But there are other studies that I have that show that it also prevents cancer, and still others that it slows down the aging process. So there's a lot of good that comes from tea. Now, not everyone can drink tea every day or drink the amount that they would really need. Therefore, my suggestion is to take a green tea capsule. I'm suggesting 200 milligrams 4 times a day. That would be equivalent to 6 cups a day. and at 6 cups a day, that is the highest rate of protection. So, and again, you can get no caffeine tea, so it doesn't adversely affect you there. Even the small amount of caffeine that's in tea is neutralized by the theanine, which is also in the tea. We have people listening all over the world, and we have people watching. You can watch today's program broadcasting live from our studios in New York City over the Progressive Radio Network. Go to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynall.com. Had a very interesting meeting yesterday with a major person within the publishing world, and who's looking to do something very creative and exciting on Progressive Radio Network. And I'll let you know about that if all things evolve in the next week or two. Something for those of you who are appreciative of the mind, especially the creative mind. You know, it was very exciting. Good things happening. I'm very strongly supportive of the Mediterranean diet. In fact, at the farmer's market, I went over to one table last Saturday, and I said, you have some purslane. Yeah, we've got purslane. We have small purslane and larger purslane. Of course, purslane grows wild. You can cultivate it, too. I have it growing in my garden. And I said, how popular is it? They said, rarely do people buy it because they don't know what it is. I said, are you telling them they should be eating the stem part, the viney part? Because that's where it's really chewy and tasty and has a wonderful quality to it. They said, no, we don't tell them. They either know or they don't know. Just interesting that people don't know that purslane is one of the most commonly consumed greens in all of the Mediterranean area. It is absolutely abundant in the diet. And when I've been in the Mediterranean, I've eaten whole purslane salads where they'll have the whole bowl, a big bowl, with purslane as the prominent item. And they don't just pull off the leaves. Now, in Lebanon, in Syria, yes, they do. They just use the leaves. But in the northern part of the Mediterranean, they use the whole, and I'm suggesting use the whole vine. You'll like it. It kind of tastes like chewing into a cucumber with the skin on with some lemon in it. That's what it tastes like. Anyhow, this is the latest on the Mediterranean diet. And this is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It says that, from Amy Norton, women who follow a traditional Mediterranean diet may have a lower risk of developing breast cancer after menopause than women with different eating habits. And they studied 15,000 Greek women for 10 years, and those that stayed with the diet had the best results of not getting breast cancer. So that's good news. So eat the Mediterranean diets. Lots of whole grains. If you want a bread, eat a whole grain bread. A pasta, eat a whole grain pasta, not a processed flour pasta. And you can tell it's a whole grain pasta because it's very gritty. And use the extra virgin olive oil and the real olive oil. And I'm going to make some olive oil next year. I can't this year. But next year, my olive trees, I'm planting a whole, I have a whole lot of olive trees planted. In fact, it's going to be kind of fun. I have taken the photographs, but I haven't put it up on my website. I have 147 different types of exotic fruit trees not found in the United States. I have 39 different fruit trees commonly found in the United States. You know, plum and peach and nectarine and apple and different types of grapes and cherries. And that's all good. And pears and star fruit and kiwi and figs. Then I get the exotics, like jackfruit. One single fruit can weigh 250 pounds. You heard me right. One single fruit. Gigantic pods. If they're green, they're used as a vegetable. Tastes similar to a sweet lettuce. If they're ripe, they taste like a custard, almost like a butterscotch custard. And they're common in Cambodia. well, now I have all these trees growing, and so I'm seeing which ones are bearing fruit. And my caretaker, I haven't been at my home in quite some time because of all my travels, but I get daily reports. And the strawberry tree is already bearing fruit in its first year. And the reason for that is because I'm using a special emulsion every 7 days. That's the key, you see. People use these stupid things they buy in the stores they don't know anything about. You can make up an emulsion, and I'll give you the formula of my emulsion because I make it. And every 7 days, for the entire year, I give it this super boost. It'd be like you going into a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and getting a vitamin C drip at 200,000 milligrams at the same time. It really stimulates the health of the tree. In fact, one tree that was supposed to grow a foot a year, and I got it at 24 inches, is already 7 feet. It's grown 7 feet in 9 months. Anyhow, the strawberry tree, and whoever heard of a strawberry tree? I'm not talking about the strawberry bush. I've got plenty of those, raspberry bushes and blackberry bushes. Those are bushes, and you trellis them, and you know, they go out and you pick them, they're great. Now, this is a strawberry tree, comes from Thailand, and it gives you a fruit the size of a small marble, and it's completely red, and you eat the whole thing, the skin and the inside. And it tastes, I would say it tastes like strawberries that are very small, that, you know, the ones you get locally that are little tiny, the very sweet ones, and an orange. If you combine the strawberry orange, that's what it tastes like. Who knew? So what I'm doing is I'm logging everything. I have meticulous logs. And then when I go to put it up on the website, I'll give you the addresses where you can get these, and how you make sure they get through the winter without freezing, and what you put in the soil, and what you spray on them that will prevent the insects from getting at them, yet be completely non-toxic, things you can make yourself. My rule is, if I'm not going to drink something, I'm not going to have my plant drink it. It's that simple. You know, so, and I can drink some pretty strong stuff. I want to tell you, I just had a wheatgrass. It was funny. The person standing at the counter said, "That's a big green juice." And the guy making juice says, "No, that's just wheatgrass." And the woman kind of made this pouty expression, says, "You're going to drink all that?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Aren't you going to get sick?" I said, "Maybe." It depends. And you got to chase it with a strawberry, and otherwise it doesn't stay down. I got a year supply of wheatgrass today. Whoa. But anyhow, I'm a big believer in understanding the life force of the plant. What allows a plant to thrive? How do you protect it when it's going to get down to 23 degrees as it did last winter in Florida? And everyone else's trees died. I didn't have a tree die. Why? Because I made little teepees. I got stakes. I put stakes around them, 4 stakes, and I wrapped a freeze cloth around it, and I put straw on the ground around the base. That increased the temperature by 10 points. So when it was 23, it was 33, and therefore it survived. All these little tricks. Anyhow, I'm going to be putting them all up on the website in the next couple of weeks, and then throughout the whole year, you'll be seeing the growth, because I've got measuring sticks so you can actually see it in time-lapse photography. It'd be a lot of fun. Therefore, if you live in Alaska or Canada or Northern Europe, you'll still be able to grow in the right environments, and I'll show you how to create that environment, tropical environment, even your own home or your backyard. So you're really not going to be limited, as we once thought you had to be, by zones. Well, forget those zones. We're way beyond that. Kidney stones becoming more common in children. We shouldn't be surprised about this. Why? Because we have an enormous amount of kids going into hospitals today because they got kidney stones. You never had that in the past. It was rare. Kidney stones happen when the urine contains crystal forms of calcium and uric acid, what we call oxalates. And this happens because of a high meat and a high soft drink diet with phosphorus compounds. So if you want your kids not to end up in a hospital, a pediatric kidney stone clinic, then get them off the soft drinks, get them off the meat products, and give them a B complex with pantothenic acid that helps break down the oxalates in the system. It was a couple weeks ago that I did a report on fructose, a high processed fructose, corn syrup, and why it was bad. And I give examples of all the things it will do in the body. Here is the latest from the University of California, Los Angeles, as published in the journal Cancer Research. Quote, these findings show that cancer cells can readily metabolize fructose to increase proliferation. They are major significance for cancer patients given dietary refined fructose consumption and indicate that efforts to reduce refined fructose intake or inhibit fructose-mediated actions may disrupt cancer growth. In lay language, when you eat fructose or drink fructose in any product, mostly in these soft drinks, you make yourself more susceptible to cancer. And, quote, pancreatic tumor cells use fructose to divide and proliferate. Tumor cells fed both glucose and fructose use the two sugars in two different ways. And they said their findings show that fructose can be metabolized and increases cancer growth. So here's a very important message for everyone. Fructose can cause your cancer to double in its capacity for metabolizing and metastasizing. Don't drink it. Don't eat it. Get it out of your diet. And therefore, and if you know anyone who has cancer, get them off the fructose. Get them on a good diet. Finally, more than 70 million U.S. adults are obese. That's 27% of the population are obese. That's not overweight. Oh, there we go, way up. We have to go up to probably almost half the American population, between a third and a half. But I'm talking about obese, where they're at risk of dying, dropping dead from a heart attack or a stroke. 72 million? That's more than if you took all the people living in New York State and all the people living in California and put those two together. That's more people who are obese. Quote, we need intensive, comprehensive, and ongoing efforts to address obesity. Yeah, I would say, because along with that, you're going to end up finding high levels of diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and inflammatory conditions. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you listening and watching throughout the world. And on our station in New York City, WMYE, the official radio station of the City of New York. And we're happy to know that a lot of people that used to listen over WBAI have come over here and are listening daily here. And when we came on, we were in, I think, 16th in number of people. Now we have more than the top six programs combined. So the audience is growing. Two commentaries. One from Bill McKibben from Tom Dispatch, and one from Jeffrey Smith, both of whom we've had on this program, because I believe it's time that we took a look at our environment, dealt with these issues in an intelligent way. Now, first and foremost, this new report that just came out from Science Daily, and it says the following. More frequent, more intense heat waves in store for New York, climate scientists predict. Heat waves like those that baked the Northeast in July are likely to be more frequent in the future, with their effects amplified in densely built urban environments like Manhattan. Quote, Manhattan is subject to an urban heat island effect because its physical landscape is significantly different from surrounding suburbs. This makes heat waves here more intense because Manhattan cannot cool off as readily as outlying areas. So it's going to get hotter in the future. Okay. But what are we doing about this? Where are they now? Remember last winter when record snowstorms brought life in the Northeast Quarter to a halt? Virginia Republicans launched a web ad, 12 inches of global warming, and the family of Oklahoma Senator and global warming skeptic, meaning denier, Jim Inhofe, built an igloo on the National Mall, labeling it Al Gore's new home. Now, as extreme weather has been setting new records for pure sweltering along the same corridor, who's building a sweat lodge on the mall labeled Jim Inhofe's new home? Where are the mocking Democratic web ads? Has the president said a word? In fact, amid temperatures that hit 105, that's not ambient heat, that's regular heat, yesterday on the East Coast, has anyone said a word? Do you realize just how rare are the stories in major papers or on television news that even suggest heavily covered weird weather in our nation and elsewhere could in any way be linked to global warming in a year that may break world warmth records? This message now is directly being shared with Glenn Beck, who is the major spokesperson in the media for denying global warming. Is certainly his right, and those of his audience believe this. But hopefully someone will get him my message. Sweltering New York, 103 in the shade and getting hotter, with its aging power infrastructure teetering at the edge of serial blackout, was the drum roll for the start of the new day one that should we pay attention? No. Record heat in Moscow, drenching monsoons and rains and floods in Pakistan and China, killing 1,000 people in one country, in one area. The mainstream media has largely left global warming in a ditch somewhere, especially when it comes to weather reporting. Writers at Scientific America may think that global warming is by now undeniable, but the U.S. Senate, undoubtedly aware not only of the temperature outside but the degree of American media and public denial about it, has reached other conclusions entirely. And that's what we're going to focus on. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the planet has just come through the warmest decade, the warmest 12 months, the warmest 6 months, the warmest April, May, and June on record. A staggering new study from Canadian researchers has shown that warmer seawater has reduced phytoplankton, the base of all major marine food chain, by 40% since 1950. Nine nations have so far set all-time temperature records this year, including Russia, 111 degrees, Niger, 118 degrees, Sudan, 121 degrees, Saudi Arabia, 126 degrees, in Pakistan, 126 degrees, which also set the new all-time Asia record, a hair under 130 degrees. Now, want to know how hot 130 degrees is? Turn on your oven. See how long you can keep your hand in the oven at 130 degrees. If you're Glenn Beck or his listeners, pay attention, because that is not ambient air. That is not the heat index. How hot does it feel? When you add in humidity, that's how hot it actually is. You could go up 10 to 15 degrees, so that meant that 130 could feel like 145. That meant that 121 in the Sudan could feel like 135 in the Sudan. And then in late July, the U.S. Senate decided to do exactly nothing about climate change. They didn't do less than they could have. They did nothing, preserving a perfect 20-year bipartisan record of no action whatsoever. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid decided not even to schedule a vote on legislation that would have capped carbon emissions. Why? Now for a moment, just to digress, for those of you who've been listening to my program for a long period of time, go back to Obama, go back to Bill Clinton and Al Gore, when on the vice president's lawn, they would throw footballs on a Friday afternoon after lunch with leaders of the environmental movement. And I went on the air that day and I said, you're going to see the entire environmental movement as we know it now compromised, because the heads of the environmental movement are looking at Gore in his blue jeans and Clinton in his blue jeans and his sunglasses as one of us. They couldn't be conspiring. They're not like the Nixons in the Bushes. These are regular guys. These are educated guys. These are caring. These are environmental guys. They're on our side. And of course, Gore and Clinton led everyone to believe that we're on your side. Didn't matter which side, to those two guys, we're on your side. Left, right, center, up, down, racist, it doesn't matter. We're on your side, as long as you give us your vote. And when I saw those pictures of them playing, you know, passing football, I said, the movement has ceased to have teeth. I remember doing a series then that some environmental groups weren't happy with. I went into their voting record and I found that on every major piece of environmental legislation, the Gore-Clinton group had eviscerated our Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act. They started opening up the virgin major hardwood forest for corporations to exploit. And they didn't sign the Kyoto agreements. Clinton wouldn't allow the signing of a bill banning landmines and cleaning up the mess we'd made in Vietnam or other countries. So everywhere you were looking, all you had to do is look at their record, not what they were saying. I'm for unions, he would say, as he would have the leaders, the AFL and CIO and others, United Mine Workers, and at the White House for dinner or lunch, photo op. And then he passed NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization, which completely cut the legs out from underneath the unions. I'm for improving, you know, the conditions. Never once which improving the quality of a person's life or raising their wages, but allowing corporations to make as much profit as they want. So there's a difference between what a person says as a politician and what they do. Look at what they do. And that's when I knew we had lost. And that's when I knew that we had... In fact, if you really want to see how much energy I put into this, go to my website, look under my speech at the United Nations just a few months ago on Earth Day, where I was the keynote speaker, and where I made a presentation on... The room was all packed with environmental group leaders. And I took a chance. I really excoriated them for compromising constantly to get political goodwill and good media and funding. And I'm thinking at any time the boos are going to start, right? I got it in my mind. Sooner or later, they're going to start saying, sit down, shut up, boo. Because I'm telling, you know, it's being broadcast all over the world. I'm saying, you who are in this room, you have no principles. You've compromised. You've sold your soul to get another grant, like all the other nonprofit and NGOs. How much do you compromise so you have a padded, you know, seat to sit in, but you're not doing anything? At the end, I got a standing ovation, no boos. And it was interesting. One after another came over and says, Gary, thank you. We needed to hear this. We needed to have a reality check, and this was a reality check. But where have you seen any other reality checks about how compromised, how utterly compromised the entire environmental movement has become? Not all environmentalists, but the movement is. Now, for many years, the lobbying fight for climate legislation on Capitol Hill has been led by a collection of the most corporate and moderate environmental groups. Groups I do not respect, like the Environmental Defense Fund. Yes? we owe them a great debt, and not just for their hard work. We owe them a debt because they did everything the way you were supposed to. They wore nice clothes, lobbied tirelessly, and compromised at every turn about everything. They should have called themselves the Environmental Compromise Defense Compromise Fund. Can we compromise any lower? I'm surprised they didn't go up to Capitol Hill in their meetings on bent knee. By the time they were done, they had a bill that only capped carbon emissions for electric utilities. Hello? What about factories or cars? And was so laden with gifts for industry that if you listen closely, you could actually hear the oinking. They bent over backwards like Soviet gymnasts. Senator John Kerry, now there's a character for you. Remember, Democrats, when I was asking for you to think about this warmongering person, this compromised soul, and vote instead for someone who wouldn't compromise, who would hold the line, Ralph Nader. Oh, no, Gary, you know, you got to get with the rest of us on this. No, Nader can't win. It's not important if Nader could win. Of course he couldn't win. But he could establish a platform for what everyone else who believed in progressive causes could fight for the next time around. And yet you voted for Kerry. And my God, you can't trust these people. They have no depth of their intellect. They have no sense of philosophy. They're morons. In any case, and compromised, totally and utterly compromised on all levels. And John Kerry is just, in my opinion, despicable. So what did Kerry say? Here's from the record. Quote, the legislator they work most closely with, Senator John Kerry, issued this rallying cry as the final negotiations began. Quote, we believe we have compromised significantly and we're prepared to compromise further. My God. That's how you go into a major bill, the most important bill. We've compromised and we're going to compromise more. Well, hello. Well, hold on a second. I shouldn't be that harsh with him because President Obama did the same thing on health care bill. We're going to give you a health care bill without any health in it. And we're going to compromise completely. The people writing the bill, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and the for-profit hospital industry, they're the ones who are going to win on this. But we're going to make sure that every nickel they want and even more they're going to get. And for the rest of you, remember, we're the compromisers. Well, wait. He's not alone. That little Barney Frank, you know, the guy who's been reprimanded by Congress for violating ethical issues, but loves to sit in front of a camera and postulate. Well, they compromised on the bill that financing. So there is no financial reform. None. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I didn't read the fine print. Surely they put back in the Glass-Steagall Act that would have protected us. No. They banned trading in commodities essential life so they couldn't exploit the average person throughout the world and cause them harm. No, you can gamble and trade and hoard and manipulate the stocks and currencies, causing massive poverty in countries. You can manipulate grain prices and wheat and rice and water and oil and gas. Oh, yeah, you're not going to be touched at all. And, oh, you want to loan money with no principles of how much you have for reserve fractionalized currency trading? No, you can give out any amount of money you want because you can print all the money you want. And you can borrow the money you want at zero interest and charge all the interest you want on late payments and credit cards. Yeah. That's what compromise does. And even that was not enough. They were left out to dry by everyone, not just Reid, not just the Republicans. Even President Obama wouldn't lend a hand, investing not a penny of his political capital in the fight. The result, total defeat. No moral victories. Now what? So now what do we do? Making nice? No. Making nice doesn't work. Reality checks, friends. Your preacher will tell you making nice. Maybe the activist in them wants to come out, but it doesn't. It was worth a try. And for all of you who did everything you were supposed to do, you were played. kind of reminds me once when I was in debate, and a person I was debating says, "Are you a medical doctor?" I said, "No. I'm just a concerned citizen." "Well, you're not qualified." I said, "What? I'm here with what I perceive as evidence of misdeeds." And on that particular one, it was about sugar. "But you don't have any academic credentials. You have a background in business. You graduated with a business administration background." I said, "Yes, but..." He said, "There's no but. When you get your degrees in the science that you're arguing in, then you'll have credibility." Okay, so I thought about it. So I went back and I went to night school and I got my degree, became a registered dietitian, and got my baccalaureate in human nutrition. And then they say, "No, that's not enough." I remember another debate. "Are you a doctorate? Did you perform, did you prove something unique that you created that would allow you to be considered an expert in the field? Well, go do that. Then come back and debate us." So I went and graduated with honors from my university. And you know, you got to be a scientist. You got to be doing original work. Okay. How many nights? From 9 at night till 5 in the morning working, publishing peer-reviewed journals, presenting before scientific bodies. So becoming a professor. And then one day I was on a show and we had a commercial and it was a debate. And this guy leans over to me and says, "You've been jumping through a lot of hoops over the last 15 years. And he said, "No matter what you do, you would never be taken seriously." And I thought about that. And he was right. And I thanked him. And I learned a valuable lesson. Why do you think I don't give a damn what any medical doctor thinks, or politician, or scientist? Because they don't count. At the end of the day, if you're going to have freedom in America, it's not because your politicians are looking after your interest. Or health, it's not because your doctors are going to be aware of what to do on your behalf. Or truth, you're not going to find it in the pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post. It's because you're going to determine that something's important enough for you to do your homework and become proactive in a positive way. That's part of the myth of our story. And I had to learn that myself. So it doesn't matter what you do. If they decide, those who have power, decide that your position is not acceptable to them, they will never bend to your needs. They will ask you to compromise to theirs. So John Kerry, he's a suck-up compromiser, but all these members of Congress are. The real non-compromisers, Chris Hedges, non-compromiser, Gerald Celente, non-compromiser. These are not the people who are being invited anywhere to speak anywhere because they're not going to compromise on something they feel is important. So what we have to look at is what we can do. And what we can do is we can stop believing in the lies of the media. We can stop believing in the deniers of global warming. We can start to do things on our own. And that means everything you can humanly do to lower your carbon footprint. Buy locally grown produce and buy it organic. Put solar panels in wherever possible to draw the heat out of your house so you don't have to use air conditioning the same amount of time. Try to have water filters so you're not using plastic all the time, so you have less that would end up as an environmental pollutant. Support local groups, support local community activities, support people in your own areas who are trying to do good things for your community and for your health. The only way out is not through the political system we have. You cannot reform a completely corrupt system. It is not reformable. You have to, in effect, start from scratch. And the only way you can start from scratch is to tell every single Republican and every single Democrat goodbye, and then find local independent people who truly are citizens of this world and not elites who go to Washington or go to Albany or go to City Hall who look after our interest and not their own. That means we cannot have election reforms. We have to abolish the entire system and start from scratch, because any kind of reform will be compromised, and those in power are masters of that manipulation. Those are my thoughts. Now a quick letter and your thoughts in return. I'm going to open up our lines after this. This is from Steve Brown, and he wrote me this yesterday. Quote, "People like Pat Condell scare me. They spring from the same xenophobic nativist and know-nothing traditions in American politics that gave us Father Coughlin, the day that, quote, every New Yorker should be saying what Pat Condell says is the day I moved to Philadelphia." Steve, I was just in Philadelphia. You don't want to make that your first choice, buddy. Trust me. Islam, quote, "didn't bomb the World Trade Center any more than Shintoism bombed Pearl Harbor, or Christianity gassed the Jews at Buchenwald, or was responsible for Timothy McVeigh blowing up the Oklahoma Federal Building. Any religion, every religion, has been used to justify whatever actions that unscrupulous political leaders or would-be leaders have perceived as advantageous at any moment of history, from the Trojan Wars to the Crusades to the War of the Roses to the Hundred Years' Wars. Well, you get the idea. Religions are stupid, internally inconsistent, and rationally indefensible systems of belief whose sacred writings are stuffed with so much undigested, primitive, self-contradictory nonsense that they can be and always have been used to justify absolutely any course of action, no matter how horrendous or bloody, by saintly humanitarians such as Jesus, or in no less than a cynical power monger such as Ben-Gurion, Netanyahu, Indira Gandhi, Lyndon Johnson, or whoever. Is building a mosque near Ground Zero a good idea? Depends upon who you're asking. Without doubt, certain elements hostile to the United States and who are also Muslim view the projected mosque as a delightful poke in the eye of American imperialism and a triumph for whatever convenient and opportunistic reading of the Quran they happen to espouse. They may either be deliberately fomenting enraged responses, or they may simply be innocent observers who nevertheless take joy in the discomfiture of the United States. But it doesn't matter which, for the motives of the mosque builders should have nothing to do with their right to build a mosque if they own the land and have the money, any more than the motives of the Nazi Party for choosing to march through Skokie were relevant to their right to march through Skokie. The march was not a good idea if you talked to Skokie's Jewish residents, but it was a great idea if you talked to Norman Link and Rockwell. The simple fact is that the right to march is protected by our laws. If you bend the laws to curb a group you don't like, then your curbing of your own group may not be far down the road. Either this country stands for what it says it does, even though its record of doing so is very poor, or it doesn't. Actually, when I talk of our country not upholding its principles, I commit the same error or crime I objected to above, by which one conflates the country with those who happen to control its political levers and are responsible for executing its laws at any moment. It is never our country that lets us down, it's our leaders, who rarely ever uphold the principles on which this country was allegedly founded, if it does not suit their agenda or the agenda of those who own them. But our leaders and those who own them have always been successful at convincing the rest of the population that defending their narrow personal interest is always in the national interest, which is almost never the actual case. This issue is not about Islam versus Christianity, or the West versus decency or democracy. It's about the attempt of different power groups to seize control and shape or distort for their own purposes the meaning of words and concepts that can inflame people's emotions, but which are themselves imprecise and empty of any intrinsic meaning. In conclusion, people who have been harmed by the World Trade Tower bombing, as well as those who were not directly harmed, but in whom nevertheless it inspires strong feelings of rage, will continue to feel what they feel. but their anger is being deliberately and cynically misdirected. It is not Islam who is their enemy, and the enemy of liberal democracy, of which Christianity, and indeed every religion, has always been the enemy, but those who are attempting to use this and every other such opportunity to manipulate public opinion to their advantage. Steve Brown. I'm holding my thoughts. I'd like to hear your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. In a moment, we will have our guest. Just a couple program announcements before we have our guest, Carolyn Corchi, on. Talk about walking. Last night, I had dinner with a friend of mine, Shamji Bhatnagar. He was the one who brought yoga and the meaning of the chakra within yoga and breathing and meditation into our consciousness 45 years ago. And he's doing a workshop out in New Jersey, in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. And if anybody wants to go, you can call at 908-322-0003. 908-322-0003. And I'm sure that you will have a wonderful experience. The fifth stage of yoga is what he's going to be dealing with. Also, joining me in the studio is Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Hey, Gary. How are you doing today?
Good.
Just to add on to that announcement you said, as a matter of fact, if they call him and mention your name, Gary, they get a $10 discount.
Good.
So just thought you would like to know. Another quick announcement is that we are currently looking for volunteers, at least 3 volunteers that have minivans and can help us move some product from our new manufacturer to our store on 92nd Street. If you have a van and you'd be willing to help out, please give Harry a call at 917-492-7518. Again, that's 917-492-7518.
Good. I'm hopeful that we'll have those products moved over, because these are some of the new inventions that are unlike anything anyone's ever seen before. But we got to get them from where they're being made, which is a new manufacturer, to our location to be able to offer to people. So if you've got a van, got a truck, please give Harry a call. And also, one last mention, for those who are interested, and this is my last mention on this, for those who are interested in spending 1 week, the last full week of August, doing a whole body, mind, spirit, healing energy retreat down in Florida with me, I can maximally handle 20 people, no more. You'll give a call at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Let's go. You have a question? Wait, we have my guest on. Let's go to the guest who is standing by. She is Carolyn Scott Corchi. She's an award-winning journalist who has written on athletics and jogging for probably 20 years or more. She's a very accomplished competitive runner, and she's been a writer for several papers and out in Oregon and around the country. And following her own cancer diagnosis and treatment recovery, Carolyn further investigated and researched the many ways the body is helped by regular walking. She's the author of The Spiritual Walker, and most recently, Healing Walks for Hard Times. Nice to have you with us today. Oh, she's not there. Oh, okay. All right, well, oh, we're having trouble getting her. All right, then we'll come back in studio.
All right. Well, Gary, one other quick mention I was going to make is about, you were talking a week ago or so about fracking and how it's going to really hurt our water lines doing the drilling and making gas and natural gas released from the ground. So if you would like to give a call to your state senator in Albany, please do so. Tell them to stop fracking, and that number is 518-255-2800. Again, that number is 518-255-2800.
Let's take a call from Tinto. I believe it's is it Tinto? Is that your name? Tino? Tino.
Hello, Gary.
Hi, Tino.
Good day. In reference to, should we build a mosque down by the World Trade Center?
Yeah, your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm certainly for it. Because one thing that gets forgotten in all this fast-paced, superficial news is, 500 Muslims died in those buildings. And in fact, when they build the mosque, I think they should put the names of those Muslims there. And just a way of showing to the world that we do stand to a certain degree for freedom and to represent those ideals. And I think it's just a way of showing, you know, to stand up, to walk the talk of what we stand for. And certainly what was indicated before, religion has been used by every fanatical group and every major religion, and that doesn't stand for the essence of it, which is compassion and love and care for your, for the suffering of humanity.
Here is the issue. I'm not going to address this. I'm going to hear other people's addressing it first. But understand that we should, if we start attacking Islam, as many have done, then you're going to have to attack every other religion, because you can find in the writings of most religions, certainly Judaism, Christianity, and of which Catholicism is a part of, and was for a long time the centerpiece of Christianity, enough statements that you could annihilate, kill, harm, destroy another human being, their family, a nation. At the same time, you can find in the same religions writings that show compassion, forgiveness, and peace and love. The trouble is the individuals who are in power at a given time who decide that they're going to have an interpretation that excludes one over the other, and then get advocates to believe in that. And many of the madrasas that are the primary teaching grounds for the next generation of believers, the so-called true believers, many of those are from the most radical elements, and they're using the doctrines they can espouse to attack any other religion, any other person as an infidel.
I agree.
And that is the danger. So we need moderates. We need the progressives within religious movements to stand up and offer commentary that directly challenges those who are the most radical and those who are the most compromised to step down.
I find that what you're saying is, to me, like the Bible, the holy books are like recipes. It's like they're telling you about an experience which words alone don't take you to. And only the people who really practice it, the people actually fasting, meditating, you know, they're the ones who know their body's a temple. As you know, in Christianity, there was the group, the Essenes, who were vegetarian. And the Pope isn't talking about them, even though the Dead Sea Scrolls came out in 47 and...
Well, let's not go into religions now. I want to hear other people's views just on this, but I thank you for calling in and sharing your point.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good day.
Tony from Queens. Tony, your turn. You're on the air.
I looked at the buildings, and I found the names of all the people on the Landmarks Commission. They're all appointed by Bloomberg. And they said those buildings were not worthy to be saved. That's a lie. They want to knock down perfectly good buildings. You want to build a mosque? Use the buildings you have there. Don't bring in a big real estate concern that wants to redo into a junk building what you claim is a green building. Did you notice that big building on 44th Street? It's a monstrosity. They're tearing down good buildings to give real estate people the chance to make these high rises where you don't need them. And by the way, those planes, we all know, were not the ones that knocked the towers down. Those buildings were imploded the same way they were in Oklahoma. So I was there the night before, Gary, when it went down, and I was sitting watching the telly, and I just knew those planes could not cause that destruction. So if there were people of the Muslim faith killed, they were not killed by those planes. That was done on an inside job, but I won't go further than that.
Okay, Tony.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. We're going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience and continue over the Internet. Our number for you to call in, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Also, I'm interested in this. I am at a point where I have to make a decision in the next 5 days about going forward with this major project on the Sustainable Homestead Project. It's not a little task. It's a big task. Idealistically, to create an environment where artistic people, creative people, people who want a quality of life can live and at the same time maintain their own values, beliefs, and employment. This is not something that's done out there, not in this environment of looking at where we can sustain our efforts over the next many years, where economically, ecologically, things are going to get worse. So the landscape is constantly changing. You know, you have the worst winters on record in some areas that have some of the nicest views, and the hottest records on in areas that have some of the best views. But in warmer environments, all these pieces of this puzzle I'm working with every day. At the end of it, there still has to be this one element. Homesteaders, I know that there would be thousands who would apply for the 10 positions going to be. But how many people would be interested in simply living in that environment, paying rent, not owning anything? Because the moment you start selling people shares or selling land, then you end up in a nightmare. What if that person's not a good person? What if they bring problems with them? No. If they come and rent, you rent from a month on, and you get, what do you get? Here's what you would get. You get, if this one location is the one that is chosen, horseback riding, rowing and boating in any one of 13 lakes with swans, and petting zoo with all kinds of exotic, fun petting animals, power walking over 2 miles on the property itself on paths, yoga, overlooking a lake, on the lake, a spa with state-of-the-art gym and a heated mineral pool, meditation gardens, a Zen meditation garden, similar to what you would find in Japan, cooking classes, gourmet vegan meals and juices, and then there'd be golfing, 9-hole golf course, no sprays used, and biking, power biking, and an hour from a major metropolitan area. That would be included in no extra cost in the rent. Things like massage or psychological counseling or whatever that is with a therapist. So that's what I'm looking at right now. And then the homesteading is a completely separate project. I've already gotten enough feedback. I've probably had 3,000 calls from people interested in homesteading. I've had a gazillion calls and emails from artists. The artisan's village I will build, which will lose a lot of money because people are not buying art the way they used to, and it has to be completely subsidized. It will come as the third stage if I do this. So those of you who would find that an interesting environment to rent space in and live for part of a year or all of a year, call and let us know. I don't need your name. I just need to know, is this something you would find of interest or take advantage of? All these are part of what I'm putting into the formula before I make my final decisions. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And this is all based upon my philosophy that I believe that the life that we have now is going to be altered. For some people, for better. For others, for worse. There's going to be a great deal of indecision where people are going to wait for things to get better, and yet for them it won't. I see a lot of social unrest, I see a lot of violence, and I see a lot of gangs. I see manipulation of prices in commodities, I see abundance of food, and I see more people not being able to afford it, much like you would see in some European countries after the fall of communism. So the rich, about, let's say that there are 3,000 super rich. There's over 1,200 billionaires, but there are 3,000 super rich. Then you have the very rich. People have more than $10 million. You're dealing with almost a million. Then you have the millionaires who are rich. They have a million net worth. And then you're dealing with about 7 to 8 million millionaires. And then you have your upper middle class. People tend to be more financially conservative. They're not going to be speculating. They like comfort. You're dealing with about 40 million. So all told, we're dealing with about 50 million people who life will be the same. You will not notice a difference. Yeah, it'll be hot in the summer and cold in the winter, but their life is going to be based upon what they enjoy doing, the foods they eat, the place they go, the shopping. Their life will not be worse. Then you have the working middle class who are struggling. They're working harder and taking home less money. And they're the ones greatest challenge to lose their homes. And then you have the challenged middle class, those who one person's working but the other one isn't. Their home's in foreclosure, or they're living in someone else's home, or they're homeless. And that's about, you're talking about almost 50 million. So you have 50 million Americans who are just fine, and you have 260 million Americans who are in deep trouble, and things will get worse, and they will be the victims of most of what happens. So I'm counting upon creating an environment, still presence in New York with what I'm doing, actually building a whole new broadcasting studio here, and still staying, living in my home in Florida. But this is a different concept, because if this works, it shows that progressive, like-minded people who understand how to live close to the land, but in comfort and enjoy, can have quality of life, and then use that as a model for people around the world who can do it in Ireland and other places. I'm not talking about a commune. I'm not talking about a collective. I'm talking about sustainable homesteading or living in that environment for quality of life. If you're a person who would find that of interest, I'd like to know. 877-627-5065. We're out of time. Now stay tuned for... is he here in the studio live? Oh, he's not. He's going to be on tape? Okay. Mike Fader, coming at you right now. I look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee. Love me.